Okay, I am going to call to order this meeting of the House Subcommittee on Higher Education. Today is April 12th, 2011. And the topic of the day is rural access to higher education. And so I'd like to welcome all the guests here to this hearing.
Both of them?
Shh. People really do read our agendas, apparently.
Good. We're really happy to be having this report that was developed for the legislature on the subject of rural access and also on the applied baccalaureate. This is work that was done during the interim coming out of House bills, or maybe, I guess, one was a House bill, one was a Senate bill. These are topics of ongoing interest to this committee. So, with that, I will go ahead and open the informational hearing on these two reports to the Oregon Legislature and call up Cam and Joe both. Thank you. Okay, Cam.
Good afternoon, members of the committee.
For the record,
and the assorted board. Yeah. I just said we lost our audience.
Yes, maybe after the choir is done performing, maybe.
Well, I think we'd have to pay them, but I'm glad you are interested, even if they're not. For the record, Cam Preuss, director of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Joe and I have... Joe Holliday, my colleague. I probably should let you introduce yourself before we continue.
Okay, so Chair Denbrough, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joe Holliday, OUS.
We have essentially divided the agenda, and I will cover applied baccalaureate, and Joe was going to cover the rural initiatives, and we were going to flip a coin to see who started first, unless you had a preference.
I don't have a coin, though.
Sign of the times.
Well, yeah. Say rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah. Actually, let me ask Rep. Parker.
You have to get the leaf early.
Dr. Beaver. Is there one of these that you would...
No. Prefer? No, honestly. Okay. They're both interesting. I'm going to lose out by being away, but I can catch up on reviewing. So.
It's all about you.
Where does that leave us?
You. I actually think that Joe should start because of the work that was done for the rural initiatives.
Okay, very good. So what I was hoping to do briefly is provide a summary of what was asked of the Joint Boards of Education in the area of rural student access and success, briefly bring you up to date on the summary and recommendations from the final report that the study group submitted, and to talk a little bit about some recent activities and some actually very encouraging things that are happening that I wanted to share with you that are very much along the lines of increasing rural student access and success. So the joint boards were asked through Senate Bill 442, among other things, to conduct a study of approaches to increase student enrollment and student success for rural residents at OUS and Oregon community colleges. In order to do that, the joint boards formed a study group. Cam was on that study group, as was Chancellor Pernsteiner. There were board members from each board, and there were university and community college presidents on the study group. I think I got all of them. We also contracted with the OSU Extension Service to do a study and some outreach, and in fact, they ended up doing, I think, a total of 7 community events throughout the state in rural parts of the state. So the report that you have, which we've excerpted from the Senate Bill 442 report, and you have today, was produced by that study group. Your former colleague Larry Galizio was our staff person to that work until he left to become the president of Clatsop Community College, and I stepped in at that point to finish up that work for the OUS side, working with Cam. And it's always a tremendous pleasure to do so. So that report demonstrated the gap between, well, I'll just say urban and rural students And there are a lot of ways you can look at it, a lot of ways you can measure it, but any way you look at it, rural students do not go to college in the same numbers and percentage, and I should pretty much emphasize percentage because there are fewer students involved, and they don't stay. If they do attend, then they don't graduate. So there is clearly a gap, and I just pulled out two of the statistics to emphasize that point. One study looked at the percentage of high school graduates who had not gone on to college the next year by winter term, and this was in 2008, I believe, and 37% of rural high school graduates in Oregon did not go to college the next year, and 25% of their urban counterparts had not gone to college. So that's one gap. And when we say urban and rural, we're using counties that are designated as urban or rural by the state. So that's where we landed in looking for some objective evidence to back up the study. And so go ahead, please.
Yes, quick question. So no further granularity than that. County is the smallest unit?
Yeah, Chair Dembrough and President Parker, members of the committee, there is more granularity in the appendix to this SB 442 report, the one done by the OSU Extension Service, and a little bit more granularity in the summary of the report. But the basic measure, I believe, was counties that are designated as rural. I believe that's where we landed there.
Mr. Chair, Representative Harker, there is information available by high school.
How many
students go on?
And the other statistic that demonstrates it is that 31% of the residents in urban counties in Oregon have at least a bachelor's degree, and only 18% of residents in rural counties in Oregon have a bachelor's degree. So those are just two of the statistics that we pulled out of there. So,
although Joe, if I could jump in, a large number of that 31% are probably people who in-migrated to the state, right? I mean, there is a large number of people who migrate in with bachelors, and they would tend to go to the urban areas, wouldn't they?
Chair Dembrough, members of the committee, that is correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, immigration has a lot to do with that. So we documented that the gap does exist and talked a little bit more about it, and ended up summarizing three primary reasons why that gap exists. The first is income. Residents from rural counties have lower per capita income and thus are less able to afford college or university. The second is distance. Literally, the options are few and far between for rural students. And the third was familiarity. And we translated that to mean a lack of college-going culture. And that's a good segue into the recommendations, because our recommendations were in two main areas. One was to increase college-going culture or promote college-going culture in areas or in demographic groups that are currently underrepresented in higher education. And the second set of recommendations was in the area of improving program completion and credential attainment. So the access piece, the college-going culture piece being one side, and then helping students complete on the other side. So several specific recommendations to strengthen college-going culture. The first was to increase our investment in proven programs such as Aspire and Gear Up, and that's the good news I have to share with you in a minute or two, because we've done that through other means. To promote the availability of dual credit options, and although it's a statewide bill, I understand from speaking with CAM, Senate Bill 254, which I believe is in Ways and Means, is a bill that gets at that somewhat. It is not the loan forgiveness per se that this Senate Bill 442 report mentioned, but it is a grant program that would serve that purpose. So something happening there. Mm-hmm. So the third was to increase pre-college advising skills for middle and high school counselors and teachers through summer institutes. The fourth was to promote student and parent ambassadors. In other words, students and parents from rural areas who had been successful to go back, who are currently successful or graduating, to go back and be ambassadors. To increase collaboration between community colleges and OUS for rural outreach. Another piece of promising news there I'll share with you in a minute about a middle school outreach consortium that we've formed this winter and spring. And finally, to increase outreach to adult learners through increased access sites and opportunities. And then in the area of improving program completion, we had two sets of recommendations. One was to create more open campus processes. There were a couple of models for that. We continue to work on that, for instance, with Central Oregon Community College and OSU Cascades, to try to create a culture there and an environment where students feel like they're at one university, just starting at COCC and going on through and trying to streamline processes and eliminate duplication. And the second set was the use of a hub-and-spoke model, which includes some investment in broadband, but also essentially tries to put more options out there for students in the spokes, if you will, from the hubs. So those were the recommendations. I should pause there and see if you had any questions about the report summary or recommendations before I
report them.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. A couple of them, I don't know if we have time to go in. We probably just should not go into the broadband aspect of it, but I'm really curious about it, okay, and would like to hear more about it. But in summary, is this a push or a pull kind of process we're dealing with? Is this a case of some of us having decided that the gap, having documented the gap and obviously seeing that it exists, decided that we ought to do something about those outlying areas and we're going to make more things available to them? Or is there a pull from the rural communities for this infrastructure, information, access, affordability, etc.?
Mr. Chair and Representative Harker, as someone who attended, I think, three of the rural forums that were held around the state, mm-hmm. it's probably a combination of the two. What
my concern is, well, the way we say it in the urban core is, you know, you can lead a horse to water,
but you can't manage
right,
it to drink.
Know? Yeah.
Yeah. I've used that one myself. What we heard from parents as well as adults that gathered to give us their feedback was, I think, the point that Joe made about culture, a college-going culture. They really wanted more opportunity, more communication with their children, if you will, while they were still in high school about what was available. So in that way, I see it as they were wanting more from us. At the same time, we were wanting to close that, what I would call an achievement gap, of our rural citizens not going on. And I think to your broadband question, we might actually increase the college going rate if more was available in their community rather than expecting them to pick up and go, which I think puts more pressure on accessibility and primarily community college accessibility. But I think we really heard, and maybe it was just the people that decided to show up and give us their opinion, but they really wanted us communicating much more frequently and much more forcefully about what was available and what were the real benefits of post-secondary education.
Okay.
Representative Springer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thinking about a bunch of things right now, and I guess I'm going to put this question out there. It's not a question. I guess I put this quandary out there. Certainly, we know that online education's had an impact here, so I'd like you to talk about that other than the obvious. It makes certain classes more accessible to some people. But I just remember back when I was living in John Day in the late 80s, so that's like forever ago in this world, and the friends that I had over there, myself not being one of them, and I was in a career at that time, wanting to access education. And in John Day, you don't. You just don't. At that point, you didn't. So fast forward 20 or plus more years later, I still have a friend over there, and she grew up in that area, didn't have access to college, and wanted it. She's a lifelong learner. She's one of the smartest people I've ever met. And she is now taking quite a few online courses. Mm-hmm. And so this is something that I guess really rings true. There is the push-pull. I think it's absolutely both, and part of it is the culture. You don't have the option of going to college. So it is viewed. I think that's very unfortunate. I don't believe that's true. But there is, I worked with a lot of kids over there, and it's, well, college wasn't for them because they lived there. That wasn't universal, but it was pretty profound.
Mm-hmm.
It truly is over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's changed some, but not as dramatically as some of us would like to see.
Mr. Chair and Representative Springer, I'm not sure.
I just put a lot out there.
I'm not sure the anecdote is, it's really not, well, it is an anecdote, but in conversation with previous president at Eastern Oregon University, he said perhaps the most profound graduation moment for him was a woman, and I'm gonna not be able to remember if it was John Day or Burns. She lived in one of those two remote locations. She had achieved her Associate of Arts transfer degree and her Eastern Oregon University degree totally online, and she didn't step on the campus until she walked across the stage. And both presidents were there to greet her and congratulate her. But that has been a decade ago. And so I tell you that story simply because it makes your point. One, you have to really want to. Because even though the Associate of Arts transfer degree is available online across the state, it still takes time to fashion together a schedule that works online for you to progress, and it likely doesn't take you the 2 years it might if you were walking onto a campus. Of course, now most associate degrees take more than 2 years because you can't count on getting the sequence of classes in the sequence that you need in order to finish on time because we're overcrowded. But that's sort of not the point here. But I think with Eastern and the partnership between Eastern Oregon University, Treasure Valley, and Blue Mountain, they constructed something called the EOCCC, Eastern Oregon Community College Collaborative, also more than a decade ago, was to really build the platform so those courses were available and were available particularly in the eastern part of the frontier part of our state.
And if I may, Chair Dembrough, Representative Springer, we believe online is critical as a piece of the overall strategy, but only a piece. And I like the way Eastern Oregon University puts it. Their motto, if you will, is on campus, online, and on site. And so they tackle it from all those angles. And you may know this already, but you know, Eastern Oregon University, about half of their enrollment is actually distance learning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a visit last week from Bob Davies, and he gave us a very impressive presentation on it. I am intrigued by the on-site aspect of it, you know, because I think that, you know, even in a small place like John Day, there are probably, you know, there's a coterie of students there who are probably, you know, enrolled at Eastern Oregon or somewhere. And, you know, if they're is an ability to have some kind of face-to-face component to it, where you know where people can be involved in group projects of different sorts. That is one element of the experience that I think is a really important one. And you know, I think that the more that institutions can partner to allow that kind of experience, the stronger the student's experience will be.
So I was just going to give you some highlights of some recent activities, and I would be done with my presentation, if that's okay.
Great.
So some encouraging news, and I think we're all looking for that right now, so I thought I'd share it. So in the GEAR Up area, and you may know this, GEAR Up is actually an acronym for Gaining Early Awareness and Readiness for Undergraduate Programs, and Oregon has had a statewide GEAR Up grant since 2002. And in 2008, we received another six-year grant for $18 million from the federal government to expand. And in this particular round of six-year funding, we have 12 cluster school districts in rural Oregon. But the news I wanted to share with you is that through working with the Ford Family Foundation, and we're tremendously grateful to them, they have invested in our GEAR Up program for the state, and they've provided over a six-year period, they're going to provide $5.8 million to expand GEAR Up programs into 10 additional rural areas. So we're really excited about that. And in the area of rural access also, Oregon has a U.S. Federal College Access Challenge Grant, otherwise known as CACG, and the governor has asked OUS to be the fiscal agent for that grant. We have two of them operating right now, and both of them have aspects that serve rural students. In one of the grants, for example, we are funding the expansion of Aspire sites, and these are the mentors in schools, again, with a rural emphasis. And we're hoping that OSAC, the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, which is the parent organization for Aspire, we're hoping that they're going to be able to add 50 new sites with a focus on rural areas. I got an update from them yesterday, and they've added 10 new sites. They plan on adding another 10 to 11 very shortly, and they're actively recruiting additional sites. So we are expanding GEAR Up and Aspire, which are proven programs, through the federal funding and the foundation funding. So we're happy about that.
Thank you, Joe. Let me stop you.
Sure.
There. Representative Springer, you had a question.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As far as the GEAR Up program, I'm thinking it's not a huge list, and I'm not necessarily interested in that, but could you spotlight some of the areas that GEAR Up is in across our state, and maybe some of those, you mentioned 10 prospective sites or anticipated sites,
right?
Maybe what those are so we can get a feel of where those are in the state.
Sure. Chair Dembrough, Representative Springer, members of the committee, I'm going to share with you a complete list after this meeting, so I've made a mental note to do that. In the case of the Ford Family Foundation funding, those sites were all going to be in Coos, Curry, and Douglas counties.
Okay.
But the sites that they currently have are in eastern Oregon, they're on the coast, they're in southern Oregon, they're all over the state.
Okay.
I'll get you that complete list.
Mm-hmm. Going back to Aspire, in the Ways and Means Ed subcommittee, I think when we had our report on OSAC, didn't the governor's budget cut Aspire? Wasn't there a reduction in Aspire?
There was a reduction for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so will this Ford Foundation granting sort of make up for that? Is that
right,
the hope?
Yeah, Chair Dembrough, the Ford Family Foundation money is for GEAR Up. The federal grant is what is serving Aspire. And that's a good question, though. What would happen to that federal funding if Aspire didn't exist? We'd have to look at a way of redirecting it. But our understanding was Aspire was going to continue and that we could fund expansion.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you.
And then the third thing I just wanted to highlight, I'm personally very excited about it, is a middle school outreach consortium that we have formed. Oh, would you like me to pause there?
While we're on the topic of Aspire, Joe, I don't know if you know or not, but what's necessary to add an Aspire site in addition to resources, obviously, but what's necessary on the ground at those schools or in those school districts?
Yes, Chair Dembrough, Representative Johnson, members of the committee. Aspire is not an OUS program, and I'm not intimately familiar with it. I'll get back to you on that.
That's fine.
Yeah, I don't want to misspeak.
Right? Thank you.
All right, but there does have. There definitely has to be a demonstration of readiness and commitment of some resources on the school level.
Okay.
Yeah, you have to prove that you deserve to have an Aspire coordinator. So there is a process.
Okay. So
the Middle School Outreach Consortium started at the OUS level, but quickly spread to include some key community college partners, as well as OHSU. And there are 14 universities and community colleges who have now formed this consortium, each contributing $1,000. OUS is matching that funding, and we're going to be doing 4 outreach events to middle school students and their families. These will be bilingual events starting on April 23rd at Portland State University. And it's just our attempt to keep some momentum going in outreach to underrepresented students and their families, and again, to promote college-going culture among underrepresented students and families. So it's an example of collaboration and a can-do attitude and finding some way to move forward. So I'll close my testimony on that positive note.
Question?
Just very briefly, yes. I would like to attend that event at PSU if I can. So could you email to me, or I don't see any info that I have on it, but could you make sure that we as a committee do have those things?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
April 23rd.
Sorry for barging
Portland
ahead.
State. Yeah.
23rd.
It's a Saturday morning.
Excellent.
That's
thanks
great
a lot.
Guest speakers lined up.
Great. Thank you. Other questions about rural access for Joe?
Not right now.
All right, why don't we move to Applied Baccalaureate, and we may find ourselves coming back to the rural issues because the Applied Baccalaureate does have some rural-urban kinds of components, as I remember them. Go ahead, Kim.
Thank you. Again, for the record, Kim Preuss from CCWD. You should have an excerpt from the full report. Again, this was another joint board's request. This is House Bill 3093, I think, if I have the number right. And I, interestingly, was invited to make a presentation at a conference that was supported by the Lumina Foundation about Applied Baccalaureate. And when I was invited, I sort of scratched my head because this study, which was undertaken following the 2009 session, was not the first time Oregon had really looked at Applied Baccalaureate, but it was the first time we had a legislative mandate to do such a thing and to produce a report. And I'm just going to hold up a map that I received when I was at that meeting. You see that Oregon is white.
Mm-hmm.
That's because we are one of 11 states who have nothing that is like an Applied Baccalaureate, but the other states do. So the green states have Applied Baccalaureate at four-year institutions, and the blue states have an Applied Baccalaureate at both a two- and a four-year institution. So I guess the point I'm making is that it's certainly a theme that has swept across the nation, but somehow it got stalled in Oregon and California, and actually on the other coast as well, just places where it hasn't come to fruition. But let me say that, and I don't want to use a duck analogy,
okay,
so I'm going to use a rose analogy instead because it's the orange and black day. But Oregon has at least, and today, has at least two Applied Baccalaureate degrees, but we have many more that, for all intents and purposes, are, they look, they smell, they are that particular rose. But we didn't for a long time name them that. So let's ground you a little bit in what Applied Baccalaureates are. They take the career training, could be in a trade, could be in hospitality, could be in nursing, could be in all kinds of fields, and it adds essentially the management component. And the bill asked us to look at whether you added the management component as the last dollop, or perhaps it was the first dollop, and then you added the specific trade or technical piece. Or there could be a management ladder, so you would take an associate of applied science and add a management component to. And the fourth distinct adult or applied baccalaureate that we were asked to look at was a work experience program. And a work experience program is not on this map. It was a new thought from the 2009 legislature. As Joe said, with the rural initiative, and as is the Oregon way, we convened a cross-section or cross-functional team that had representation from both the two and the four-year, as well as faculty and board members, and we built a team that was led by my colleague Bruce Schaefer of the Oregon University System. Again, I was part of the process, but certainly didn't put in the same level of work that Bruce did. But there were three primary goals, and you will find them more fully articulated on, I think it's page 6 of the handout I have given you, it's the back page. But they won't surprise you. The first one is to provide Oregonians opportunities to who originally aspired for a two-year degree to be able to pursue a four-year degree without losing the credits that they had gained. It's also second and very important goal was to provide Oregon employers with employees that had advanced technical and management skill, because you don't always know when you start with an associate of applied science that you really want to continue to be an engineer, and you really want to be able to have those credits count. And the third equally important goal was to improve the efficiency of our delivery system and to save students time as they progress toward their degree. Again, a primary motivation here was that students who started at a community college and had an associate's degree that are almost always thought of as terminal degrees, and I don't mean that they kill you off, but that they stop you, because the way in which an applied science degree is built or program is built, it's built on what the employer community says they need. And for many of our career and technical programs that have an associate of science or applied science, the math level may not be as high as it is for other academic programs. So math 95 might be all that the employer is saying is necessary for this degree or certificate. But when you go to transfer that to a university, you don't get college credit for it because it's not over a 100 level. So how do we figure out how students don't lose the credits that they've earned, or almost as big an issue, they aren't retaking courses? Now, the onus is not simply on the university system to accept it. There's a lot of onus on the community college to examine the level, and we're talking primarily math, but sometimes reading and writing as well, to be sure that the individual student has what they need to be academically prepared to have junior status. It's not as easy as just, well, you should just accept it. And I know you've had conversation about the students' transfer bill of rights and responsibilities, and all of this plays into that conversation as well. So in Oregon, among the community colleges with both public and private four-year institutions, we have literally hundreds of articulation agreements. And that articulation agreement says, for this associate of applied science, these are the courses, credits that will be accepted by this institution to ensure that the student doesn't lose anything as they go. An applied baccalaureate is a way of saying you don't need those hundreds of articulation agreements, because it's understood that the academic achievement of the student at the AAS level is sufficient to transfer and to count. So we know that that exists, and the report really says that we need to take a closer review of what already exists. We didn't feel like we needed to go out and build something, but we really needed to look at what we already have. And in the report, you will see, in the full report, and I apologize, I looked as I was walking over, I thought the link was somewhere on the front or back page, and it's not, so I'll send that to Anna so that you can have that. But inside there was a review of the Oregon Institute of Technology, and they have what many of the states on this map would consider a bachelor's of applied science. That's what they are. And they are currently working with any number of community colleges to figure out how the associate of applied science that would be awarded at a community college would walk across and could actually be an applied baccalaureate. So we need to do a review ourselves of what we currently offer. And if it is a rose, we could call it a rose. But there's no point in renaming it if it works as it currently is, just because we want there to be 10 states instead of 11. So it has to make sense. We also want to make sure that we are more intentional in our advising of students and what their ultimate goal is, so that they don't get accidentally tripped up. If they think they want to be an engineer and perhaps they want that associate of science, we'll make sure that they get the math and reading that they need in order to transfer later. There is a lot of pressure on, speak for the university system, there's a lot of pressure from my fellow community college colleagues to for the university system not to unpack that degree. And we have a high level of understanding and agreement about what the Associate of Arts Oregon transfer degree is. So that degree should never be unpacked because we built it together. That's not the case with the Associate of Applied Science. And so we need to do more work, as I said, to really understand what's inside.
Kim, can I just interrupt you there? So is there work going on to sort of standardizing the Associate of Arts, Associate of Applied Science degree so that it could kind of transfer more easily?
Mr. Chair, I cannot say that there is work going on to standardize. There is work going on specifically around math, to review levels of math that are in Associate of Science and looking at where a student might naturally transfer for what kind of major and to do the crosswalk and then have a real conversation with the employer community about we don't want to intentionally raise the level of math if it's not necessary, but somewhere there has to be a balance between what is necessary for a bachelor's and what's necessary for work, since we know, at least in my 11 years on this job, that the level of career and academic preparation for high school students has gone up. It would surprise me if that were not the case for associate degrees as well, that the bar is going up for what one needs to know and be able to do. But there was a letter written to the joint board's subcommittee called that's the Unified Education Enterprise and to the council of the joint board's articulation commission, as it was a letter written by myself and President Williams from Portland Community College, to ask them to keep the pressure up, to keep the work going. The report, and again, the full report will tell you that we ask for resources to continue this work because it's not part of anybody's regular work to build an applied baccalaureate. If you will. I mean, it would be for the students' benefit, but we wanted to make sure as part of the ongoing work plan of both of those groups who really concentrate on breaking down barriers to transitions for community college and university students as well as high school students, we wanted them to continue the work on applied baccalaureates specific to articulation agreements, ensuring that students have greater incentive to finish an associate degree, that most or all of the credits from an associate's count toward a bachelor's and an applied bachelor's, and that the need to repeat material is eliminated or reduced in this process. And I know that both the Unified Education Enterprise and the Joint Boards Articulation Commission have this work on their work plan. So I would be happy to answer any other questions that you might have.
Committee questions?
Some comments. You know, it's interesting how within the medical field, you know, whether you're in the nursing or going into, you know, being an MD, that, you know, one of the ways that that field accomplishes standardization or making sure that people know the same stuff as with a statewide exam. You know, you go through and you get your, you know, you go to your 2 years of, my wife's an RN, so I know about this, but you know, you get your 2 year degree, or two, not degree, but you get your 2 years of prereqs done. Mm-hmm. Then you go to 2 years of basically clinical and classroom stuff, but you still have to pass the nursing board in order to get your RN.
Right.
And, of course, if you're going to go into med school, you do the same thing through your first 4 years. You have to pass your MCAT exam to get into medical school. And then, so it just that tends to level the playing field for everybody. And if you're getting, you know, superior training at this school or that school or you're not, it's going to show up on how you perform on that standardized exam. So I don't know whether that's possible to encourage some of these industries or some of these business sectors or whatever looking for more applied, you know, degrees and so forth to come up with some sort of a standardized exam that could actually, with what the industry requires or what they need to be competent in those fields, rather than trying to have all of these degrees necessarily mesh up, because that'll become apparent when they're all having to pass the same exam and so forth. So just some thoughts. I don't know whether that's something that's been considered or not.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, you make a good point, and I'll add it to the mix.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me throw in a sort of related issue, and that is, you know, I think in many applied baccalaureate programs, there is a certain amount of credit given for prior learning or prior experience, mm-hmm. right, that can be through exams added to the mix. Is that something that you looked at as part of this process, Kim?
Mr. Chair, yes, and it's actually spawned another work group within the community colleges that is looking at credit for prior learning, whether it's military, wherever it might be, or for credit for experience, and how to competency base that work, rather than does that experience look like this class I have offered. Instead of that, it's more along the certification, the board certification that Representative Johnson was looking at. So we are underway because there are community colleges that currently grant credit for prior learning. Mm-hmm. And we need to know more about how they do that and how well they do that.
Excuse me.
Thank you.
You know, this subcommittee passed out a bill related to the National Career Readiness Certificate, and that's a program that I think has gotten a lot of push from the business community. Right, there's a lot of interest, a lot of investment in it, a lot of interest. are we getting something like that with the Applied Baccalaureate? I mean, it seems to me that that if the business community were really interested in this, it would really help with the marketing of it and the development of it. And, you know, students knew that this is a path that they could take that would lead to, you know, a much higher likelihood of getting a job.
Mm-hmm.
And if, in fact, that the you know, business and industry really were invested in it, it seems like that's sort of the piece that's needed to really make this successful. So I just wonder if this is a conversation that's happening.
Mr. Chair, I know that it was part of our conversation. It is one of the, it's not a recommendation, but one of the key points around the Applied Baccalaureate was if an employer, I guess we start from the place that if the employer requests it, or if the employer demands it or prefers a particular level of degree or diploma, that and such a degree does not exist, mm-hmm. that we would work with the university system to ensure that some sort of applied baccalaureate could be built to respond to that employer's request. Now, it would have to be more than one, of course, but you get the point. And if, let's say, for instance, if in Central Oregon there is an interest in a bachelor's degree in hospitality, and I'm not even certain that I can make up the right thing, but if Central Oregon has an Associate of Applied Science in Recreation and hospitality, but there is no, at Cascades, there is no four-year equivalent, then the conversation would need to begin with, okay, how would we build such a thing that would be responsive to the labor market need that's being articulated? Could we bring one from Oregon State? Could we bring one from Portland State? You know, I don't know, but that's really how we have talked about being responsive to the labor market.
On Thursday, we're going to be devoting our attention to career schools and, you know, different career colleges and universities. And one of the one of the charges that we hear support of the career school model is that they're much more nimble than the public colleges and universities. And I'm just wondering the applied baccalaureate model seems to be kind of an answer to that, potentially. Mm-hmm. That is something where, you know, some creative packaging can happen that can really address a variety of different career needs. And, I'm wondering if that's something that's talked about. Are you hearing, this is going back to, you know, my question with business interest and participation. You know, are there calls from business for more nimbleness and, you know, a more flexibility, a quicker packaging of degree options for students?
Mm-hmm. Chair Dembrough and members of the committee, I want to thank Cam for answering for the Oregon University system on several of these questions, mm-hmm. because she's more knowledgeable on the applied baccalaureate work, certainly. My frame of reference is the Oregon Institute of Technology, because I worked there for 15 years before coming to the Chancellor's office, and they pride themselves on being nimble, but that is a specialized mission, so I think your question is broader. I think in the cases of all the universities, we have, you know, very well-known policies and procedures that any new program would follow to become approved. And you're right, it's nimble is probably not the word I would use to describe that process. But it does exist, and I think when there's a demonstrated need, I think it's faster than if not. So I think when there is, Cam used the word pressure, and that's a good word to use, or just interest. I think the universities do respond to those needs, but I think that also at the bachelor's degree level, keeping professional programs aside, of course, you know, accounting, engineering, architecture, etc., I think there is more of a commitment to developing a set of knowledge and skills, critical thinking, problem-solving abilities that will serve as a foundation for specialization afterwards. I believe, I don't want to speak for our system in that regard, but I believe that's kind of where we would come down in general.
Mr. Chair, the panel likely knows that community colleges build non-credit programs or non-credit courses, and the review process that my colleague was just articulating for the university system can be leapt over, if you will, at a community college if it's a non-credit course or set of courses.
Customized training
or probably a very good example is the wind technician program at Columbia Gorge was originally built as non-credit because they could do it quickly. They could be in conversation with the employer. They could build the courses that were necessary. Then they stepped back. They started offering it. Then they stepped back and said to my office, now we want to build the four-credit program, and we want to make sure that all of this that the employer said was critical moves over, but we went through the process. That process took maybe 6-8 months, maybe 9 months, to get to an approved credit program. So certainly there is nimbleness that is part and parcel to responding to employer needs. But when it comes to credit and the accreditation that goes with that credit and the granting of that degree. It's a much more thoughtful process. It's also a much more public process, because anything that we reimburse for that is a credit course has to pass muster, that the private sector isn't already doing it, that so we aren't eating up their market share. And you're probably aware that's called adverse impact and detrimental duplication. And community colleges and the universities must first signal that they want to offer a program that's built with public funds, and the privates have the opportunity to say, no, that would encroach on my market share. And until that can be resolved, the public program does not move forward.
Actually, just again, this is kind of in preparation for our session on Thursday, if you don't mind, colleagues. How common is that adverse impact across the country, that kind of process that schools have to worry about encroaching on the private share?
Well, Mr. Chair, you're making me go way back in my memory bank as the director of the Office of Education Policy and Planning, which was abolished in 97. It has a function inside of it that is currently inside of the OSAC, called the Oregon Office of Degree Authorization.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And Oregon's statutory foundation for degree authorization could be the most rigid in the United States for public and private programs. It's not unique, but I do believe it is probably the most structured of its kind.
Again, looking forward to Thursday. Well, one of the challenges I think that we're going to hear from the career colleges is that the courses that their students take at their colleges don't transfer. Right, I mean, that's kind of a downside, mm-hmm. as it were, is that their degrees tend to be very, very much terminal, which is true for some community college degrees as well. And the applied baccalaureate is an effort, if I may, to kind of remove some of that termination, terminalization. And, you know, do you ever see a time in which the career colleges could transition into the universities, or do you see them as being so different in terms of the accreditation standards, the credentials of their instructors and all that? I don't know, Joe.
Yeah, Chair Denbrough, members of the committee, that's a very good question, and I think you're absolutely right that it would start or focus on a look at accreditation standards, and I don't think it would be a quick process at all. No, I think there are some natural resistance to going in that direction that could be overcome, you know, if it's demonstrated that what students have learned applies and transfers, and therefore it doesn't dilute the quality of the bachelor's degree that the university is offering.
Yes.
If I may, just before we leave applied baccalaureate, if we are, I just wanted to add on behalf of our chief academic officer, Sana Andrews, Vice Chancellor Andrews, who could not be here today, that we are interested in continuing the work on applied baccalaureate. And Cam did mention the degrees at OIT, and I think she mentioned the one at Southern Oregon University, maybe not by name, but there is an applied baccalaureate degree at SOU. We want to do more, and Sana comes from Idaho, where she's had a pretty positive experience with that, so we're willing to work on it through the UEE and JBAC. As Cam mentioned, I staff both of those for OUS, so fits very comfortably,
yes.
Very comfortably into our work plans, but again, OUS has an interest in doing more.
Great, thank you. Any other questions of... Well, thank you very much for coming and giving us this report. And both of these, as you mentioned, are available at length on the UE website or
OUS website, I believe, is where they're at.
OUS website, and look for the joint boards link, and then it has a set of reports. But I'll make that easier for you and send it to Anna.
Sure, thank you. And colleagues, you know, in advance of the meeting on Thursday, where, you know, we're going to be hearing from the career schools, if there is any information that you would like us to, you know, ask, you know, make sure that the colleges are giving us, I think it would be useful if we could give that to them ahead of time, those questions.
And Josette will be here, I believe.
Josette will be here.
Whom else do we have scheduled for?
Gina Wickstrom with the Northwest Career Colleges Federation. The Oregon Department of Education will be here. Oxford will be here. And I'm still waiting to hear from a couple other stakeholders.
Okay. And we found out that the bill that pertains to the career colleges is not one that we're going to be able to work because we didn't quite get it posted.
Well, it's not us.
It wasn't posted.
Committee didn't post the bill.
Is there nothing?
That was clear.
A committee to be left on.
Is there nothing we can do about that?
Priority goes.
No.
Maybe.
Okay.
Okay. Well, anyway, it'll be highly informational, and whether it leads to some legislation in this session or not, it hopefully will give.
It would be really nice that
something to move forward
if we can have a vote on that. I think it's a good bill, and it's a good vote to be able to take.
So with that, I will close this information hearing. See you Thursday.